At Baker's, no matter where you order free pickup, you get the same great deals as you'd get in-store. So you can save when you order during band practice or at the dog park or wherever. Start your cart with the Baker's app and save from wherever today. Baker's, fresh for everyone. $35 order minimum. Restrictions may apply. Subject to availability.
Get more ways to save at the Buy 5 or More Save $1 Each sale. Just buy 5 or more participating items and save a dollar each with card. Baker's, fresh for everyone.
Me and my friend drove to Chicago probably when we were 16 to go to the occult bookstore so we could get the Satanic Bible.
Oh, man. My wife got it for as a stocking stuffer for me this year. Or, I'm sorry, Santa did.
Yeah. I'm not surprised you can't get Steve Turner because really? I think he's always been. I would expect him to be maybe a repeat of Steve Albini. Actually, though, I was surprised by how well your Steve Albini interview went. Honestly,
I was too. Actually, I knew he was a prickly guy.
Yeah,
he was funner than I expected him to be, and he was still kind of like, you know, terse. And
that's funny to think about because I knew how Steve Albini was. I thought it went really well,
yeah,
but people who didn't know anything about him thought that it didn't go well. That's because they don't know how bad it could have gone.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah. That's interesting. I mean, the worst thing he did to you was like not laugh at a joke.
Right.
Whereas I would have expected him to scold you or, you know, who knows what, you know,
Who you got in the Super Bowl?
Who's playing? Is it the Packers and the Chiefs? Because I only know because I heard you guys say that Aaron and Chris, yeah, it's their teams. Is that who it is?
It is not. It is the Buccaneers and the Chiefs. Oh. Yeah, Tom Brady and the Buccaneers dashed Aaron Camaro's dreams this year. So made mine.
Yeah, I didn't even pay attention to that.
I know. It was kind of...
I didn't even know Tom Brady was on the Buccaneers, so.
I'm actually impressed. You know who I said his name, and you didn't seem confused. So,
no, I know. I have seen Tom Brady in the news, where, and I figured he wasn't on the Patriots anymore, but I didn't even pay enough attention to know he was on the Buccaneers.
Right on. Well, do you know what city the Buccaneers play in?
Yeah, Tampa Bay. I
All
know
right,
that.
You're a little better than I probably
well, yeah,
my, cared for.
My dad was a big sports guy, so I know plenty just because of that.
Was he disappointed in you then?
Yeah, definitely.
Are you you're the disappointing? Do you have any siblings?
What? Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, he's not disappointed anymore. But yeah, there was a time in middle school when I had long hair and a jean jacket with, you know, buttons on it, and he was not happy. Yeah. There, like 7th, 8th grade kind of time where it was pretty obvious that he wasn't too pleased. Yeah. With how things turned out.
My wonderful father, he thankfully for me, didn't really have any sort of thing that he was super into. He didn't hunt, he didn't fish, he didn't watch sports. He just worked and took care of his family, and that was about it. He liked cars, I guess. I don't know. So really, I could go my own way. You know what I mean? He pretty much supported anything I did as long as I wasn't committing crimes or doing drugs.
Yeah.
Which I did both. But,
anyway. I got a summer job where my dad worked, and that was when we kind of became friends again. So it was only a couple of years there where I felt like he was like, what the fuck is up with this kid? You know?
You don't know me, Dad!
Yeah,
we should make a movie about that. You know, those father son rekindling movies are always touching. We could get that fucker on Lifetime, right?
I don't. Not with my dad. fuck, every other word is fuck with my dad, so.
Lifetime, you know, to have an R-rated.
If we were going to make a realistic movie, we wouldn't be able to have it on Lifetime.
Well, I think it's time that I introduce you. I'm speaking with Brian B.J. Cramp from the Rock and Roll podcast. Let's touch on that real quick. Do you have any status update there with the when that will return? Will you know, you talked off mic about maybe reformatting the show itself. Will you keep the name, or what's just give us the details here, Brian.
Yeah, I'm keeping the name, but I'm gonna do it as kind of series of episodes now, instead of just, you know, having a one-off episode every week. And it's been since like August that I haven't even had any episodes. Yeah. So I probably don't have an audience anymore. But hopefully it's going to be in the same feed and everything when it comes back. So hopefully they'll still be there.
Okay.
It's just a matter of finding the time to put it together the way I want it to be. But I've done a ton of interviews for it. It's just, I have a lot of stuff to work with. It's just a matter of having the time to finish it up.
Well, we look forward to the return of your show. I'm sure we'll announce it on our show once we know it's back up and running too. We might as well announce it now. Your show will be back as of March 1st, right?
Possibly, but I doubt it.
I really need a scoop, BJ. Well, welcome back to Whatever Nevermind. You, of course, were on for the, it's almost a sister album for this thing, the Green River EP that we covered. Oh, way back. I can't remember what. Do you remember what number that was? Like 21 or 22, something like that?
Yeah, I don't remember.
It was pretty early on. So a couple things are going to be a little bit different for you here. One, you've kind of already answered the block questions that I throw in between side one and side two with everybody.
Yeah.
I kind of know your background. Well, coming in at number five on Rolling Stone's greatest grunge albums of all time is the 1988 EP from Mudhoney's Super Fuzz Big Muff. This is was recorded at Reciprocal Recording Studios in Seattle, Washington, produced by Jack Endino, former guest of the show. Released on Sub Pop Records, it says it came out on October 20th, 1988. And for those scoring at home, that is my birthday. Anyway, the album cover, I have to admit, I love the album cover. Shot by, I got his name here somewhere, Peterson is his last name. He does just a ton of the that scene's picture. I think he's even got a picture book out of, like, basically Seattle Grunge. Charles Peterson, there you go. And then the thing is named after the two guitar pedals. It is not a double entendre or a euphemism. It is, there's two guitar pedals, the Big Muff and the Super Fuzz. And I think the Super Fuzz is something that Steve Turner was using, and then he found out about the Big Muff, and he switched to the Big Muff, and then at that point, Mark Arm basically became the guy who used the Super Fuzz. As you know, especially when you're a fledgling band, sharing things like that is a pretty big, it's pretty legit. You know what I mean? It's like, well, that's how I get these things. You know, the effects pedals were fairly expensive, especially those two. This is a record I never heard back in the day. I listened to it for the first time, probably, at least in my knowledge, right around the time I was interviewing Jack and Dino for this program. So not that long ago. And then, of course, I digested it a bit this week. For some reason, I understand that you've heard this record back in the day.
Yeah, I had the tape that had the singles on it too. That's what I had.
So is that like the 1990 release?
Yeah.
Okay. So for
and
today,
I probably
we're
bought that.
Just real quick on that, I'll point out for the listener. Today we're going to go. We're going to focus on the original release, but I do have some of the stuff on the on that version you have that I wanted to touch on. And any other tracks you wanted to get into too, we'll kind of treat that as side too. But carry on.
I couldn't even have told you what the original release was because I just knew it from that, you know?
Sure.
So I didn't know which songs, and they're in different order on there also than the original release, which they did the same thing with Green River, right? They like flipped the sides.
Yeah,
I remember
it
was the same thing with Green River. But
yeah, because I listened to the Jack and Dino remix deluxe edition in preparation for this show. Just because I think he did a really good job with the Green River and the Ultra Mega OK one, but
yeah, I was listening to that on Spotify, that version, I think.
Okay.
And I probably bought that in like '92, Did you have exclusive company in Minneapolis too? Or was that just like a Wisconsin thing?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm thinking that must be a Scotty deal.
Yeah, that was the record store. Like they had like a plastic case where the tapes would be in, where they would have to get the tape for you, you know, so you couldn't steal them. Cause that was actually a time where somebody would steal a cassette tape. But yeah, I remember going there and I'm sure we talked about this basically the same thing on the Green River episode, but it was just, you know, going from Pearl Jam to Green River to Mudhoney, you know, I was just, they were connected. So I wanted to hear them, but back then to hear it, you had to buy it. There wasn't really any other way around that. So, I know I had this tape and I had, Every Good Boy Deserves Fudge, which is my favorite Mudhoney release.
Steve Turner's as well. I found that out in an interview with Sound and Vision magazine.
Yeah, that has the best songs. It's not the best produced one, definitely, but it's not the guitars. Sometimes it seems like they're not even using the Super Fuzz or the Big Muff on Every Good Boy Deserves Fudge. It's not as distorted, not as heavy.
Okay.
But the song, I like the songs better on that. The more melodic, you know, the songs are just better melodies. I don't know if I bought those two at the same time, but I kind of think I probably did. And then I remember buying Piece of Cake like the day it came out. I was living in the dorms in Madison, and right across the street there was this place called The Den. And it was basically like a 7-Eleven, but they also sold CDs and tapes. And like every Tuesday morning before class, you would walk in there and they would have all the new releases on display, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a lot of memories of going to The Den, you know, when these new albums would come out. I still remember when Piece of Cake came out, because I was pretty big into Mudhoney at that point. Yeah, I sent you the picture of the ticket stub where I saw them in 93. It was at Marquette University. That was on Sunday. And then on Tuesday in Madison, the Supersuckers were playing at a club called OK's Corral. And so I hadn't gone to a club show or anything yet. You know, I had been in Madison for what at that point, like 5 months or 6 months or something. So we had this plan where we were going to try to talk to the Supersuckers at the Mudhoney show and get them to get us in to the show in Madison. So we were hanging around where at Marquette. I remember it was in like a building. The place where they played was just a room in this big building. And we were kind of in the lobby area of this building, just hanging around. And here come three of the four guys from the Supersuckers, just all of them except Eddie, the singer. All three of the other guys are walking together. And me and Andrew just went straight up to them. And we told them, we want to come see you guys on Tuesday, but we're worried they're not going to let us in. And then Ron Heathman, who just passed away last year, he's like, yeah, man, just come find us. We'll get you in, man. You know, they were really cool. And so that Tuesday night, we walked over there, but it was hilarious because we had no idea how it worked. So we probably went over there at like 9 o'clock or something, where if anybody knows how it works, like at a club in a college town, they're not going to start playing till like 1 a.m. or something. Okay. It's like, you know, that show is not starting very early. And so we walked over there and we must have caught them just after sound check, but as we were walking to the club, Ron and Eddie come walking out of the club, and me and Andrew like, hey, hey, and Ron kind of recognized us, but he's like, oh God, they showed up, you know? and then Eddie's like, you guys want to get high? Cause they were going to their van, and we were like, no, thanks.
Nerds.
Yeah. I still can't believe we turned them down. And the look on his face when we said no, I still remember the look on his face.
Let's back up a little bit because I get into the history of this band. They kind of came out of the ashes of Green River, which we covered earlier in the list. Steve Turner and Mark Arm were in that band with Stone and Jeff from Pearl Jam, who went on to do Mother Love Bone before going Mookie, Blaylock, Pearl Jam, all that good stuff. And so these guys, I believe at the time of Green River breaking up, though, Steve Turner was no longer in Green River. And so my understanding is Mark contacted him, told him to drop out of college. He's going to start a new band called Mud Honey. And the rest is history. One of the things I think is amazing is that this is largely the same band today. Matt Lucan is the only one. He quit in like 2008. I have it somewhere here, but I watched the documentary. I think it's called I'm Now, the Story of Mud Honey. They're pretty laid back, normal dudes for the most part. It's hard to believe a band that didn't have really any legitimate success financially. We'll put it that way. I think they definitely had, they were success in a different way, but we're able to keep that same core of guys together. And one thing they talk about in there is that it's because you see a lot of bands, you know, 10 years into their history, they show up for soundcheck and then everybody goes their separate ways. Where these guys basically are just still good friends. They all just hang out all the time.
Yeah, they were, it must be really weird for guys like that who were at ground zero of grunge, but had hardly any of the success that everybody else had.
Right.
You know?
And, you know, and for anybody that is new to them or doesn't, you know, like I've had a handful of guests on here that, God, were good 10, 15 years younger than me. So there are people checking into grunge that maybe don't know this backstory. But yeah, Mudhoney was in many, you know, in almost every book I read, you know, about that scene, they're mentioned as basically kind of the godfathers, the forefathers, the first grunge band. I know there's different elements and things that go back a little bit prior to this with all the Green River, and Soundgarden was there first, and the Melvins are often given that same, respect as well. But, so many people, I know when I talked to Bruce Pavitt, he says Mudhoney represents grunge better than any other band.
Like would Sub Pop even have, you know, made it long enough to release Nirvana if it hadn't been for Mudhoney?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, I think it was this record that kind of did well in the UK and got them a pile of cash to kind of keep things moving.
Yeah, and I know Touch Me, I'm Sick was a big...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I think that was the first single Sub Pop released, or it was one of the very first things they put out?
Yeah, it was very early. I know it was definitely the first thing Mudhoney released. Backed with Sweet Young Thing Ain't Sweet No More.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of... You know, I mean, from like Every Good Boy Deserves Fudge, Super Fuzz, Big Muff, Sweet Young Thing, So Sweet No More, Touch Me, I'm Sick. There's a lot of kind of, I don't know, this is almost like getting into some kind of that dark web porn, you know. It's just So let's get into the record, BJ. We're going to, like I said just a few minutes ago, we're going to go with the original 6-track release. I'll kind of walk us down because it sounds like you're more familiar with the track order on the 1990 release with all the singles included. The original 1988 EP on Sub Pop Records opens up with Need.
Give me love, list,
Well, it's pretty much a garage rock sounding song, very similar to some stuff from the 60s.
Yeah,
I like the verse melody. It doesn't really have much of a chorus, much of a melody on the chorus, though. Like we were talking about, when I think of Superfuzz Big Muff, my first thoughts are more the songs from the singles that start off that release that I like a lot more than almost anything that's actually on Superfuzz Big Muff. Like you said, Touch Me, I'm Sick and Sweet Young Thing, those are both great. And also, those are both almost like some kind of weird version of Spinal Tap. They're funny. You know, they have a very dark humor to them. And there's not as much of that humor on this, on the songs on this EP, as there were on that, that first single. So I wonder how people who really loved that single kind of reacted to the EP at the time.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I kind of echo what you're saying there. I like those two songs better than anything on this record.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, this seems to be on this list, and we'll talk about the ranking at the end here. Largely, I don't know, it could be a bit for debate fodder. I think it belongs in the 50. I'm not sure number 5 is where it should be put. But it's largely because of its influence and the importance of Mudhoney had in, like, you brought up a great point there with basically keeping Sub Pop afloat until Nirvana. And just that whole scene in general, really, their role is really important. So, because when I listen to this record, it doesn't seem like, well, this isn't really... Even all the research I did, when I hear the people talk about their favorite Mudhoney record, this one isn't mentioned. So odd that this kind of came up, but it is their first kind of full release, so to speak.
Yeah, no, I think if a Mudhoney record was going to be on the list, it should have been Every Good Boy Deserves Fudge.
Yeah, and I saw that one come up the most.
Yeah, and that was like their biggest seller too on Sub Pop. That was a more popular than this, if you look at like record sales.
So I think Rolling Stone is trolling us.
So. Yeah, I mean, like you said, they're picking this more for like the history of it than for the quality of it, I think, which I think is what some of that list is about more like the place it holds in the history and the legend of grunge.
Yeah.
More than the actual
There's
songs.
A couple other examples of that Deep Six soundtrack. I couldn't find one person involved that had anything positive to say about it as far as the material on there. But, you know, again, it was just the first kind of official release of all these, you know, this whole scene. So, but to the song Need, I will say this is like one of the, at least on this record, my Mudhoney references are pretty narrow. I don't have a lot. I don't go deep on Mudhoney. But Mark's vocals here are pretty clean. The drums definitely have a low-budget quality to the recording on this, more so than some of the other Jack and Dino recordings around this time. So, I don't know. Like, it clearly was not recorded on a 24-track. So, I mean, the drums were mixed and bounced to one stereo track is all my thoughts there.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts on the song Need?
Not really. It's not bad or anything, but yeah. it's not a great song. It doesn't have a great chorus, you know.
Yeah, the whole '60s garage thing, is definitely, that's kind of an overall from everything I'm familiar with Mudhoney on it. I kind of get that it's almost like a cross between punk '60s garage rock and like even a little bit of surf music, you know. I guessed it on Brian Davis's podcast, Damn Good Movie Memories. We talked about that movie Suburbia. Have you ever seen that?
Aren't there two movies called Suburbia?
Yeah, this is the one from 83 or 84, where it talks about like these punk kids that live in a house.
No, I don't think so. Isn't there one with what's that guy's name, that Scientologist guy?
Tom Cruise.
No. Oh,
there's a more recent one. I never saw it though.
Yeah, no, I don't think I've seen the one you're talking about.
Anyway, these songs would fit perfect in the soundtrack on there. It's just this whole record, I think largely because I was so closely, we had recorded that a couple weeks ago. Now I'm getting into this. I'm like, that really would be a good vibe for that shitty cult movie that I love. But what about rating here, Brian? Do you got a special rating system for us today?
I was thinking pierced eyebrows.
Ooh, nice. How many pierced eyebrows does Need get?
Maybe 3. Is it out of 5?
Yeah, it is out of 5, but of course I've given every guest leeway. You can go negative, you can go way high, whatever you want to do.
I remember I had a lot of trouble on the Green River one because if I compare it to other songs, I'm trying not to do that as much on this. Like if I think of my favorite songs and then put Need against that, that would be a different story than just judging it, I guess, in terms of this release. Or whatever, you know.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's not, it's fine. Like, like I say, and I think, you know, when they put this on the list, like the majority of people who know this release know that the one with the singles on it, you know?
Yeah.
Because anybody who only listened to these 6 songs had the vinyl. because this was never released. If this was released on cassette and CD, it was that version that has all the other songs on it too. So
But I'm trying to be a purist and
I know. So this being the leadoff track is just like really weird. I never thought of this song as the first song, you know, in any way in the past, you know.
Well, you know, when I started listening to this, I assumed the deluxe edition that I was listening to, because I had no idea, would be the first six or seven songs songs.
Right.
And then, of course, once I start breaking on the track list, and I'm like, well, I've been listening to these, and they're not even on here.
Right. Yeah.
Fucked everything up for me. But so you sticking with a three?
Yeah, yeah.
I, too, give this a solid three pierced eyebrows. the next song up is Chain That Door.
On this song, the best part of this song for me is the music. I like the music a lot, and the arrangement, it's really cool, and it's short. It's better that it's shorter than some of these other songs. But again, it just doesn't have that much of a chorus, just repeating the words, you know, over and over, which without a real very much of a melody just doesn't usually do it for me on a chorus, you know. It's an interesting song, and like I say, the arrangement is really cool, and the way it's recorded, and I guess the production.
I like this tune. This is probably one of my favorite ones on here, if I had to pick one. You know, but I'm trying to also, like, listen to this, you know, from the eyes of maybe if I was a fan at that time, or also maybe if I was in that band, or what it was like for them to create this at that age. This is very early on in their career. This is actually a very good band. The performances from the drums to the guitars are well played. They're tight. As loose as their overall sound is, they're not sloppy or anything like that. I mentioned this in the Green River episode, but to me, the standout issue with this group is Mark Arm singing. He's just not a singer. And I went and listened to a couple more recent tracks to see if there was much progression from the band there, and there really isn't. they sound a little older, you know what I mean, and maybe a little more polished, but Mark still is that kind of same kind of singer, and I think if they ever really wanted that kind of next level success or some kind of song with a hook, they were not going to write that song, and they weren't going to get it with him as a singer. But I think they've kind of made it clear that that was never really a driving force for them. That they did what they did because for what they were doing, and that's somewhat admirable to kind of stick to your guns to that a certain extent. But I do kind of like to see artists that kind of progress and change, even when I don't like what they change. I find it interesting to see where they want to go next. I didn't see a lot of this in my brief overrun of Mudhoney. So if I miss stuff, I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm not an expert on this band by any means. But this song, to me, again, it's just two tracks in a row where I'm just like, I don't want to hear this guy sing. I got a feeling this is a lot more enjoyable to see these guys live than it is to listen to one of their recordings. But that said, I gave this 3.5. Are we sticking with the pierced eyebrows?
Yeah.
Pierced eyebrows. This gets 3.5 pierced eyebrows, and that is one of my favorite songs on the record. What did you rate it?
Yeah, I have it at 3 pierced eyebrows. So.
You're a more prickly raider than I am, if I recall. But
yeah,
you're harder to please. That's what the ladies say.
I could definitely understand not liking his voice. I don't have a problem with it. I guess I think his voice is better when they're doing the funny songs, or at least the songs that
I could see that.
You know, the idea that Mudhoney was ever going to connect with the people that liked Nirvana and Pearl Jam, that was just never going to happen, even though I think at the time everybody thought it would. it was a weird time.
I recall that, though. I remember I would hear about this band. And then, like, the first exposure I had to them was the single soundtrack. And I'm like, well, this is okay. But that overblown track. But I don't know.
Yeah, it was weird at the time. Everybody thought, well, Mudhoney are going to be huge, too, because everybody else is huge. but yeah, when you look back, it's like, yeah, that was never – they were never going to connect on that level for multiple reasons. But I will say, thinking about it in terms of Green River, Mudhoney are way better than Green River.
Oh, I'd agree with that. This the music is much – I don't know. Even this record, to me, is light years ahead of what we reviewed for Green River.
Green River were really derivative and not really – you know, Mudhoney has its own really distinct personality and vibe, and it's much more of an original kind of unique thing than Green River was, I think. It very fully realized. Mudhoney is very fully realized in terms of their whole shtick, and they seem very confident, you know. And like you're saying, they're a great band. Green River, they were much younger and kind of, you know. I think Mudhoney is just much more focused and... you know, that combination of guys, they were really onto something in terms of, I could see why they were a real cult kind of thing that people were really into at the time.
Like you mentioned Green River, like look at the progression of Jeff and Stone's career versus Mudhoney. And that's kind of what I'm talking about, is that, like, you know, as you get more polished, you get new ideas, you kind of grow. And that's what typically artists want. It doesn't really seem like that's what these guys wanted, though. I would compare their career goals closer to the Melvins, but the problem is their core sound in the early, you know, especially out the gate, is closer to those other bands that were able to kind of make that transition and become big. The Melvins always sounded like a band that nobody was gonna like, you know. I mean, it just gonna have a very niche audience, you know.
Yeah.
All right, well, track three, I assume this is the end of side one on the EP, but we're not going to worry about that today. Mud Ride.
Boring and way too long.
Good point.
It's almost 6 minutes of this, and there's not much I like about Mud Ride at all.
Yeah,
it's just long and boring, not the kind of thing I'm into personally.
Yeah, it did not click with me any either. They are slowing down a little bit, so they're trying to, you know, give us some color and shape to the record, I suppose. But I gotta tell you, BJ, I have heard just a myriad of local bands that sound just like this, song, you know. It's just like, and none of them have ever gone anywhere other than being maybe local stars. I was trying to think about any band that I've ever heard that had something similar to this kind of sound that did anything. And the best I could come up with, if you've heard any of the early White Zombie, kind of reminiscent of this, but I don't know.
That reminds me. When I was reading something yesterday or today, and I saw that one of Mudhoney's very first shows was opening for White Zombie. I saw that.
That would have been a fun show. This song is a snoozer. I don't even know if I want to read it. What do you got?
One pierced eyebrow.
Yeah, you know, your description of it brought me down. I had it at two. Maybe I'll slide it to a one. I'm going to let it keep its two. Both its eyebrows are pierced.
Like the way you're saying it sounds like a lot of local bands you've heard. This is the kind of song that's a lot more fun to play than it is to listen to.
Yeah.
You know, they have fun jamming this, you know, and they have fun playing it, but that's a whole different dynamic than having to sit there and listen to it.
Yeah, even live, I bet you people are probably getting a beer. They're going up to get a fresh can of Rainier. So there's a Seattle reference for you. For the fourth song on the album, on the EP, then, is called No One Has.
Yeah, this one, I really like the lyrics.
Yeah.
Like he says, I've been so close to no way out, I don't lock the door no more. Stuff like there's really cool lines like that in the song.
I actually wrote that line down too. Now, this is the second reference he had to not wanting a door locked. He got chained that door.
Right.
You know, I wonder if there's some like repressed trauma, or maybe not repressed, who knows. He was not allowed to escape certain situations as a child.
I mean, what I have on my notes is this one is pretty repetitive and doesn't really go anywhere. it's all right, but like I said before, if I was a person who had Touch Me, I'm Sick, Sweet Young Thing single, and then this came out, I think I would have been pretty disappointed, honestly. I think the You Got It single, I'm not sure if that came out before this too, but that song is way better. That song is great, too.
What song?
You Got It.
Oh, okay.
That was another of their singles that's on the compilation.
Sure.
And also, my favorite song from that compilation would probably Hate the Police, which is a cover. But that song is so great. I'm not sure when that came out in reference to this record, but I have 2.75 pierced eyebrows.
I had it at 3, but I gave it an extra half point for the bass line. I think that's pretty killer on this. 3.5 pierced eyebrows. All right, up next is a song called If I Think.
This is another one that's just repetitive and kind of boring.
I would describe every song that way so far.
Yeah, that is one of the problems.
If I didn't listen to this as recently as yesterday, and I listened to it like 3 times just yesterday alone, I would have a hard time recalling some of these things. But it's just, he has a line in here, forgot how to breathe. I wrote down the joke, forgot how to sing in key. This is literally bad singing. I guess, you know, Jack Endino is early in his days as a producer, but this is when someone comes in and says, you know, maybe try this tomorrow. Because whatever, I don't know if look, there's a myriad of reasons why you're just not able to hit a note one day. These aren't hard notes to hit. He's just not that good of a singer. But he can sing in key. He just doesn't hear. This is just, it's painful at times.
Yeah, that might have been part of the point. I'm not sure.
You think? Okay.
Well, that was, you know,
good lyrics on this song, by the way. I think Mark is actually very early on showing he's got a pretty good craft as far as a lyricist.
Yeah, the lyrics are good, except some of the songs, they have like 2 lines that are just repeated over and over.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I always thought that maybe, you know, Mark Arm's voice was kind of supposed to be abrasive to a certain extent. He obviously wasn't going to ever be able to sing a pretty song. So
well, but I mean, Kurt Cobain was that way too. I mean, but it's a different voice. You know, I would.
Well, when Kurt Cobain screams, it's amazing. Though.
Yeah.
When Mark Arm screams, it's alienating. You know, so
that's kind of my point. Is that he just isn't very good.
Yeah, I mean, Kurt Cobain had an insane voice. That I mean, when he screamed, it sounded great. So Mark Arm, yeah, when he screams, it's almost funny. I think I laugh. Touch Me, I'm Sick. It's almost like he's being funny when he's screaming on purpose. You know, I think there's a.
I think the you know, we keep going back to those songs. Let's we actually have time set aside just for them. I get the callback reference anyway. Let's we're almost at the end of this, and we can get into the probably what I think are the more interesting tunes. I would give this maybe a 3, probably largely because of Mark's lyrics, to be honest with you. I really enjoyed I love that line, just the, you know, it's the chorus, whatever you want to call it. If I think, I'm thinking, I think of you. I thought that was, you know, it's kind of a neat way to say something like that. It's like basically his mind just shuts down, but when it's working, he's just thinking about this person, you know.
Yeah, it's funny to say if I think.
Yeah, exactly. <You
know? laughs> yeah I gave this 2 pierced eyebrows. It's too too boring for me.
Well, I think it's clear for both of us that even though you're a fan of Mudhoney, mercifully, the record ends now with a song called In and Out of Grace.
Yeah, this is by far my favorite song on the album. Even though it's too long, I would edit it down and make it like a 3-minute song.
Yeah.
But this song has a series of great riffs, like killer riffs. The playing on this is always great. But the riffs in this song are awesome. And I love the double entendre of the In and Out of Grace. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
I always Grace enjoy some... I always enjoy some blasphemy, so there's some nice blasphemy in this song, it feels like. And there's some great lines. I think one time he says, "Save me, Lord, fuck the race." So he's like, save me, but fuck everyone else.
Oh, God, how I love to hate.
Yeah, this is a great song. This is the song that's the closest to the quality of, you know, the other songs we're talking about.
Sure, okay.
That's on here. I think, except I'm not really a fan of the minute long kind of breakdown middle of it.
Listening to that, that is very reminiscent, and this is no joke, of the Peter Criss drum solo on Alive. First of all, it has a little bit of that flange effect going, and I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. And then he actually like hits a little couple, like even does that little dun 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 dun, 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 dun. And I'm like, I think there's no way that's a coincidence. I think it's not spot on. Maybe I'll drop a little bit of it in here to make my point, but it's there. What do you got for a rating on it then?
4 pierced eyebrows.
Oh, nice. This peaks at 3.5 pierced eyebrows with me, so I had two tracks at 3.5, I believe. There were three. So half the record got a 3.5. The rest was lower, but... all right. Now, as we keep going back to, there is the expanded edition, which the point you made was that really was the version that most people that heard this record heard.
Right.
And it has a much different track listing. For one, it opens up with the song "Touch Me, I'm Sick." Which I think that's got to be the closest thing they have to a hit, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I think that was like an underground college radio kind of hit kind of thing at the time.
I like the song, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a really fun song. It's a really cool, it's kind of a novelty kind of feel song to me. I mean, that's, you know, that first single, because Sweet Young Thing, It's Sweet No More is also is funny, you know?
Yeah.
On purpose, too. It's very kind of a dark kind of humor, but you know, there, you don't really get that on the EP except for In and Out of Grace. That's really the only time on the EP that I think you get the same kind of vibe as that first single, where there's a lot of humor and it's very quirky. And but I think a lot of the enjoyment you get from Touch Me, I'm Sick and Sweet Young Thing is that they're funny, you know?
And yeah, and like the sequencing of the six songs on the EP aren't even in the same order, and
yeah,
they're at the end. But so it's kind of a weird release. But I don't, you know, we're talking about a weird record label at a weird time too. So, but yeah, Sweet Young Thing Ain't Sweet No More is, I mean, those two songs might be my two favorite Mudhoney songs.
Yeah, they are
somewhat limited.
They are great. And also, You Gotta Keep It Out of My Face, which was another single. That song is great, too. I think, like I say, In and Out of Grace definitely measures up to those songs, but the rest of it doesn't.
Yeah.
Is lacking kind of the distinct personality and quirkiness of Mudhoney, I think. Hate the Police, I don't know if you've ever heard the original. That's a great song by the Dicks, who are Austin. We're an Austin punk band, but I like the Mudhoney version more.
Yeah,
that's one of those cover songs that's even better than the original. That is great. That's my favorite song on the whole thing is Hate the Police.
And that, I mean, lyrically, that's right in line with like things that like NWA were rapping about. I mean, kind of early on, you know, talking about police brutality and stuff of that nature.
And well, you know, it's one of those things where the Mudhoney is the first version of the song I heard.
Yeah.
And I loved it. So it's going to be hard for me not for that not to be my favorite version, I guess, but it is a really great version of the song. Looking at the track list, though, the what makes Flipping the Sides make sense is it makes Mudride the last song.
Yeah,
and that does make sense to be the last song. That might just be the whole reason they did that, was just to put that at the end.
Could be. Yeah, and then look, you know, again, this is kind of a fledgling label. Maybe they're still working out, learning how to sequence a record, you know, because I agree with your sentiment that Need was kind of a weird opener for the record.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, In and Out of Grace would have made more sense as like the opening song.
As I'm wont to do, I always give my esteemed guest the final thoughts. So I'll get mine out of the way. I get why Mudhoney is important to the story of grunge. I do have a lot of respect, probably more respect for him now after kind of researching this record than I did going in, just because, you know, just really delving into their story a little bit, how they really have hung together. I mean, to lose only one member and only as recently as 2008 and still kind of be an active band that goes out and does shows and releases new music, is really, I don't know, to me that is cool. I mean, that these guys still hang in there and still enjoy what they're doing and still go out and do it for whatever reason and for whatever audience. I also like some of the interviews I've seen with Mark from the recent years, just the stark honesty that he has about his band and their popularity and doesn't seem to really be affected by it. You know what I mean? I wonder if, like, during the heyday of grunge, like when everything was blowing up and they weren't, if he felt that way. I wasn't able to find any interviews at that time that might have shown some snarkiness. You know what I mean? But for the most part, they've kind of hung tight. As a record, I don't know that I'll ever listen to this again. My biggest takeaway was, you know, getting in a little more familiar with the song "Touch Me, I'm Sick." That's something that'll probably, you know, be on a playlist for me somewhere at some point. I'll go back to that for a myriad of different reasons, but this album as a whole doesn't do much for me. I'm probably going to have to check out Every Good Boy Does Fudge, just because that one just kept coming up in everything I did as the record that represent Mudhoney the best, from band members to reviewers, writers for magazines, things of that nature, fans, all that good stuff. So just for the sake of finding out more, I'm going to dig into that. But I'm guessing Mudhoney just isn't for me. I get what they're trying to do. It's just not my cup of tea. With that said, I do not think it belongs at number 5 remotely. I don't even know if it belongs in the top 25. It belongs in the top 50, I suppose. But again, maybe swap it out for Every Good Boy Does Fudge, and I slide it up here a little bit higher. But I slide this one all the way back to 19 from number 5 on my personal list.
These kind of lists annoy me for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
But obviously, when they're making this list, they have to put Mudhoney on it.
Right.
Even if whoever's making the list doesn't think, I don't know how they put this list together. Was it like a bunch of different writers voted or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's like that, because I think it's what they do with all their lists, you know.
Right. So they're going to put Mudhoney on there just because they have to, for one thing, even if they don't think it's deserves to be on there in terms of quality. If they're going to have a grunge list, they're going to have something by Mudhoney on there.
Absolutely.
And that's not really, you know, so they're already saying, well, these aren't really the best. This is the list of, you know, the stuff also that we're required to include for whatever reason.
Right.
But I agree that with, you know, whoever else you're referencing, that Every Good Boy Deserves Fudge is the best quality Mudhoney album in terms of songs and everything. But also, it's like I was saying, it's not as heavy. It doesn't have a lot of the grunge. what makes them like one of the godfathers of grunge, which is the Super Fuzz and the Big Muff and the heaviness and that kind of stuff. A lot of that's not on Every Good Boy Deserves Fudge. So I can understand why, if they're talking specifically about grunge and not just about what's the best Mudhoney. If you listen to Touch Me, I'm Sick, you can hear how they influenced Kurt Cobain, you know, in that song specifically. They were definitely very influential on.
I'd almost put that single by itself on this list. I think it had a huge impact.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense for sure. It's been a long time since I listened to Mudhoney, and I know I said the same thing on the Green River episode about how it's funny to go back to stuff you listen to when your breadth of knowledge of music was a lot more limited.
Right.
And, you know, so this is not something I go back to very often, but there was a time where I did listen to Mudhoney a lot. Because, you know, going back, when I hear these songs, I have heard these songs a lot in my life because they are still very familiar to me. So, like you were saying, you couldn't remember them, but when I just look at the titles, I remember these songs immediately. They were drilled into my brain at some point.
Cool.
This EP, these 6 songs shouldn't be on this list and definitely should not be anywhere near that high on the list. It's all just about the history of it and where Mudhoney fit into that. Those two bands, Green River and Mudhoney, are just that to that scene that turned into grunge. They're just at the very beginning, and they're very influential and important to the whole thing and to the whole Sub Pop world too. So obviously, and yeah, so when it was in the paper, oh, Mudhoney signed with Reprise, I'm sure most people are like, oh, they're going to be huge, you know, because it just seemed like anything that came out of that, everybody was going to be able to ride Kurt Cobain's coattails to, you know, money and fame. That's how it seemed for a moment there. There definitely was a time where everybody thought Mudhoney were going to be the next big thing, I think. And that's really funny to look back on and be like, really? People thought that was going to It doesn't seem like it would ever have been possible, but it definitely...
They were Spin Magazine darlings, man.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure I expected Piece of Cake to come out and be a huge hit at the time.
Well, do you remember where you ranked this? I have it in front of me if you don't.
No, I don't.
You had it at number 12.
Really?
Yeah.
I probably put it too high. I probably didn't even listen to it at the time. Well, what's number 13?
Number 13. Okay, so this is what you got. I'll go from 13 down. Stone Temple Pilots, Core, Green River, Dry as a Bone, Smashing Pumpkins, Siamese Dream, Stone Temple Pilots, Purple, Soundgarden, Super Unknown, L7, Bricks Are Heavy, Soundgarden, Ultra Mega OK, then Hole, Live Through This, Deep Six, Jerry Cantrell, the two Melvins records, and you at the bottom of the list is Mad Season Above.
Excuse me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I definitely like the Stone Temple Pilots records more than these six songs, you know, that I've, and
so
I put those.
So should we just drop this down to 16?
Yeah, maybe.
All right. Well, it's always fun talking to you, BJ. I'm happy that we've been able to, I don't know, form a friendship, basically starting at Rockin' Pod 1 and just, you know, kind of maintaining it through social media and then our annual trek to Nashville, which maybe we'll see you out there this summer, too. But as always, thanks again for coming back on the show. You did a great job. I really appreciate your insight.
Whatever.
All right. Never mind. Start a Slade podcast.
Yeah.
BJ and Baco, welcome to, I don't know, what would be a good one? Come on, Feel the Slade.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frenino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.